Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you the Age of Heroes with Astrid. Today we're going to be constructing the Elysium Project and walking the path of public service. Greetings and welcome, Astrid. How are you?
Greetings, Hercules. Doing well. It's absolutely beautiful, this weather. We'll take it while we can get it.
Almost certainly. Got chilly toward the night, but it was beautiful all day.
Well, it is November, so every day like this is a gift. So, you know, we just enjoy it. The seasons have their places. Each one has their beauty. Each one has their negative aspects. So I choose to go ahead thinking about the summer and how the ACs were a necessary part of life.
And now the heaters are going to be soon necessary. And that's the cycle.
Most definitely.
So I'm really excited by tonight's topic on how there are different points of view, you know, in terms of... I found that to be very, very true. We live in a very polarized reality.
Most definitely. Before we do that, I'd like to do a little update with the Sussex County events.
Sure.
There's so many nonprofits. I'm not going to get into everything because there will be so much going on. And if anyone is interested, Sussex County events, they could always go to the Sussex County Chamber of Commerce or the individual groups, or even just Google, you know, different events, holiday events, because we do have Thanksgiving coming up. We have Veterans Day tomorrow. We have a lot of many different activities related to volunteerism and donations, and of course all the things that come along with the holidays. But you know, there are a couple of nonprofits that do so much, one being Karen Ann Quinlan Hospice, and tomorrow they're actually celebrating veterans by having a Veterans Brown Bag Day lunch, and that's from 11:30 to 1 p.m. at two locations, actually. There's Sparta Ave, Sparta location, which most of us know, but they also have one on 200 3rd Street in Milford, PA. So if there is a vet who would like to afford themselves to have a free lunch, you can RSVP, go right to online onto the Karen Ann Quinlan Hospice site, open up the page for that event, and put in the information and whether you would like to go to either which site, in other words, the Sparta site in New Jersey or the Milford site in PA. And they do require proof of service to be shown, and it's basically sandwich, chips, a drink, a couple little other things there. You can RSVP online, and you can also call 973-383-0115, which is the Karen Ann Quinlan Hospice number. And then on the 13th, which is Saturday, is their final SK paper shred event until March. So if you want to get rid of these documents and you're doing some purging in your household, as I am, perfect time to do it, you know, like that, since Maybon, since that autumn equinox, it's like getting ready for the dark and shadow times and turning more inward and making your place a little more cozy and bearable when you have the time. It's a great thing to go there. It's on site, right there outside. They shred. It's not taken away and shredded somewhere else. And $6 gets you a whole great large grocery bag shredded, and the money goes to hospice, which is a really great event. It really is a great event and a great organization. They do so much.
Yes, they do.
Amazing. And then, of course, on 12/8, which is Wednesday, they're going to pull their half and half for hospice raffle at 12 to 12:15. I'm certain that's going to be an online thing. And basically, every year they hold a 50-50 raffle. The tickets are only $10 each. The winner does not need to be present. And they say you can get up to as much as 10,000 $1,000. Wow. And last year the woman that won received over $8,000. So that's nice. You know, someone gets their Christmas bills paid and maybe something else and afford a dinner. That's the way things are going. And hospice gets some money to carry on all of the things they do.
Yes.
Right. And they also have their Lights of Life. You know, we know their butterfly release, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
To commemorate anyone that's passed on. But they also have the Lights of Life, where a tree is lit up and the names, for $20, you can have your name of someone commemorated that you have loved. Could be an animal, it could be a friend, it could be just someone you admire. And it's going to be both live and virtual this year. So the virtual Zoom is on 12/7, which is a Tuesday at 7 o'clock. PM, and they'll give you the information. Just go online again to their Lights of Life event. And the live sites, 11:30, so November 30th, Tuesday, 7 p.m. for Warren County, 12/1, which is December 1st and Wednesday, 7 p.m. at Sussex County, and then 12/2, which is a Thursday, 7 p.m. at Pike County, which is in PA. Pike County actually is in Milford. You know, that's where they hold it, right there. So it's a nice way to remember someone. They also have larger donations, whereas they give you a Lennox ornament. There are other ways of doing things. But, again, it's a nice way to remember someone. They're an amazing organization. They really are.
It certainly is. Yeah, we had that, thanks to you, we had that ceremony for my aunt, and it was beautiful, and it was very memorable, and it still stays with us to this day.
And it is nice when it's live. So, you know, things are coming back little by little, which is a nice thing. Slowly, of course. Project Self-Sufficiency, another great nonprofit. They are doing a lot in terms of toy collections, food collections. And they have in-person food and toy donations. They're accepted Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and something called the Season of Hope Toy Shop. Now, they basically will – you can register. You know, a family in need, they don't have – they're in a horrible economic situation, and they would like to have toys for their children, their relatives. You can register, contact Project Self-Sufficiency, register, and they will work something out with getting toys to you. The toys must be new and unwrapped. They are not accepting soft animals, blankets, or pillows because of COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They will accept donations of wrapping paper, ribbons, gift bags, and boxes. And they will sanitize everything they get, of course. There are a lot of different organizations that are accepting coat drives. And one is the Family Promise of Sussex County. They have a coat drive. And you can register to donate or drop off. They have public collection sites. They can be contacted at 973-533-1993. Coats only they're requesting. And, of course, you could always go online. www.jerseycares.org is the site for them. And then there are other places as well, but they are looking for winter coats, brand new, sizes L, XL, XXL, and you can buy and ship them to the office at 19 Church Street. And you can go find out more by going to www.tapinto.net. So, I mean, those are just a few of the things. There are so many things going on. And then we can get into our topic of the night about looking at this political election from different standpoints, local, state, national, and how there is such a great divide.
Yes.
With voters, with expectations, with predictions. Very, very different. Very, very different. And again, it comes down to perspective. I will say that there are different things going on, even in terms about new rules from OSHA. OSHA handles the COVID rules. And now corporate America is entering the next phase of the effort to deal with it. And I know there's been a change to this, but it was projected that companies of 100 or more employees have until January 4th to ensure all their workers are either fully vaccinated or submit to weekly testing and mandatory masking. Now, there's a big pushback to this. And there was a really great article in the paper concerning questions about this. And basically, OSHA was looking at it. And they asked, you know, which employers are covered by, this is OSHA's rule. All right, so they're saying a Gallagher survey of more than 500 businesses released in early November found the number of employers, requiring vaccinations had doubled since August to 17%. That's still not much. And OSHA is considering whether to extend the rule to employees that are working in places where there are fewer than 100. So here we go. It says, do part-timers and contractors count towards the 100 worker threshold? All employees, including part-time, count towards the threshold. Independent contractors do not. Will they these requirements apply to remote workers? And it says, the teleworkers and people who work exclusively outdoors will not be required to be vaccinated or submit to weekly testing because OSHA's rule is focused on ensuring people's protection in the workplace, inside, so not outside, or if you're home. And there's quite a few things here, but now there's talk about a judge saying not the case, that it's not going to happen. So we shall see what happens with this. And I think this is part of the frustration of people, not knowing what to expect. Rules changing back and forth, you know, and this has been a long haul. The effects of this virus have extended far beyond just the workplace, as we see now, where states that, we're so used to having availability, and we've mentioned this before on air, saying that we're a country of plenty. And all of a sudden, we're dealing with bare shelves, restaurants with long waits, or restaurants that actually have to close days because they actually don't have the workers to perform their duties, and situations where you can't find meat, you can't do this, you can't do that. Now, of course, the problems with cars. You need a new car. You're so used to just turning your car in, your lease, and getting a new one. Well, guess what? The numbers of cars available are minimal because of the computer chips for the cars.
Right.
So we've seen that happen, and now to the point where, again, the domino effect, well, if you can't get a new car, what about a really good used car? Guess what? There's a shortage of those, too. So you have these different – people are getting bombarded on every side, every which way, going to the stores, seeing how much more everything costs because – a lot of the plants aren't working. They don't have the workers. And again, you know, I had a situation with a friend, a mutual friend of yours and mine, that, you know, who has gone to meditation with us, who contacted me and said, well, tell Linda I can't be there on Saturday because my grandchild was in school and happened to be in close proximity of someone who's being tested for COVID. Therefore, that child, anyone who comes into contact with that child, now has to be quarantined until they find out. And if you see your grandchild, guess what? You are going to have to be quarantined. So it's affecting not just the people within the immediate family. It's affecting students, their families, and activities that they normally do. And you would hope that people are being as honest as this particular one woman was, saying, you know, tell Linda I can't make it because I really, now I'm on the outer string of this this COVID quarantine, and I have to wait and see what happens because I'm not going to jeopardize anybody's health.
Right.
So, you know, very, very awkward situation. And just as we had one president that caused people to leave the party that had a conscience or decide to vote the other way to the other party, you now have a pushback against the Democratic Party, as we saw with this election, because people are frustrated. They're absolutely frustrated. And what happens is people start to react emotionally rather than logically. It's okay. Okay, I've had enough of this. I want something to happen, and I want it to happen now. So you have a new regime in, and as you and I both know, with politics, it takes time because it's not up to you. The president doesn't control everything. Well, they usually don't. Let's put it that way. We did have one who did. But it becomes very difficult. And in a time when you saw a pushback of people who were resentful in the state of New Jersey because their kids were not in school, which meant that they had to stay home from their job.
Right.
You know, if they lost their job, what am I supposed to do when I can't even get in touch with the unemployment office? Because never before in the history of this country have we had such a massive number of people in need of programs and information and action to reactions. So here comes a situation where people are just so frustrated and they want to see action and they want some of these problems resolved. We look up onto, as we're talking about the national situation, and I'll trickle down because it will end with something very interesting locally. But as you look at the nation, you saw in Virginia what happened, you know, a pushback there.
Mm-hmm.
You're having a problem with coming to a solution. And you'll say, well, why when, you know, you have a party that's in charge and why can't they get this going? Because it has to be the complete majority of the Democrats in order to get this through. That's why.
Right.
And you have two who are fighting it tooth and nail. One being Manchin from Virginia and the other one being Sinema, who was from Arizona. And you say, well, the Democratic Party has always been splintered in the sense that you have progressives that want programs and then you have the moderates that may want this or that. But it's more than that. And it comes down to the fact that Senator Manchin makes a lot of money from the coal industry. This is an issue. And the biggest issue when you go beyond where the money comes from is lobbying. His aides lobbied the coal, fossil fuel, and pharma while all this was going on. Funding has to change in this country. It's that simple.
I agree.
Because
all
when someone, you're right. All across the board, every politician, doesn't matter what party, because once you start accepting major contributions, you now are indebted. So you can continue to get major contributions. Very expensive to run a campaign. Very expensive. And when you are getting big money from coal, fossil fuels, whatever, then you're going to see someone like Manchin say, I don't want this climate proposal in these bills. I don't want it. No, because major money, probably fund so much of his campaign, will not be there. That's the issue. And Sinema, same thing, not with coal, obviously. Pharma, big money from the pharma industry.
Right.
So this is the problem. The problem is, well, why can't they get it done? Let's look beyond why they can't get it done. Let's look at why they're resisting. And sure, don't listen. Look. That's what we always say, research for yourself. When you're making $4.5 million from the coal industry, fossil fuels, why would he vote against it? Always comes down to the money. And this is the case with every single person that's running for something. You have to look at the lobby groups. There are a few that will not accept any donations from major corporations, rare and few, far in between. One who will not is, you know, AOC. She will not. Kristen Gillibrand refused to take money because said, once I take money from a major corporation, then I'm indebted and there's going to be payback. No one gives you money for nothing. There is no free ride, which is why there's even problems with trying to eke out a deal with corporate taxes. Because if you're accepting money from major corporations, how can you vote for a bill that's going to make them pay their fair share when they have been getting a free ride for who knows how long?
So how – this stuff is common knowledge, though. I see it on the news all the time and on YouTube. So it's
Common knowledge to you, common knowledge to me, probably common knowledge to a lot of our listeners out there. But when you look at the rest of America – and it's not a put-down. I'm not saying people are ignorant. What I'm saying is that people choose to hear what they want to hear. And it depends on what news channel you're listening to. Are you even picking up a newspaper? Or is it better just to say something without knowing? Because I worked in education, and I was always amazed at the people that couldn't write a major cause that was so important, could not write a letter or call members of Congress on something that was so important to them. No, I'm going to go home. Let someone else do it. And if we want to see change in this country, in the way this way politicians run things, I love when I hear that, the public sector, then they have to be forced. There has to be changes in the laws. And in terms, and the first thing has to be campaign finance. And at one point, at least, you had to declare certain amounts of money. When Citizens United went through, there are people that are sending money through other, you know, their dark horses. They make sure their money gets funded and funneled a certain way. Huge amounts not declared because they're using, you know, a go-between. These are things that cannot be allowed. They cannot be allowed. And until people start standing up and saying, you know, no, we don't, we want to see financing changed. You can't have it both ways, though, because then it's going to have to be funded by the government, which is the taxpayer. But then a flat rate, why can't they work out a deal? This is a matter of brainstorming, you know. Equal time airtime, and they get a tax deduction for providing it. There are things that can be done, but the problem is you always have some people that'll say, no, I want the added advantage. I want more time because that guarantees that I'm going to win. This is a severe problem. This is the root of our problem, of things not getting done. It's not just party, because every single one has to scramble for money. Every single one of them. If you make it an equal playing field and you take away the indebtedness to the those that pay and pay big, you know, like fossil fuel, my gosh. And major corporations, and I'm talking really big money corporations that pay no taxes, there will be a more level playing field. But maybe that's the problem. Maybe there are people within the powers that be don't want a level playing field, as we see with gerrymandering or not following through on voters' rights, which should be so you shouldn't need a law, another act to say that everyone has the right to vote and this shouldn't occur, that shouldn't occur. When we've seen what's happened in local districts in places like Georgia, you know, and thank God for people like Stacey Abrams. But, I mean, that election was taken away from her due to a violation of ethics and people intimidated and polling places closed and people not notified or names just erased from the books. And all of a sudden they go to vote and they're told, well, no, you know, we don't have you down, or they didn't put them down at the new polling place, and massive confusion.
Yeah, it's become a big problem. I work the polls, as you know, and
they
started transitioning now to more digital, and it's safer because you go into the poll booth, you know, it tells you if somebody voted before when they go to register, and it tells you if they were sent a mail-in ballot or whatever, and there's the provincial ballots. If they, you know, if they dispute that, they can fill out a provincial ballot. Anybody can. And then the Board of Elections makes a determination. But if they haven't voted, they create their ballot. The machine gives them plenty of opportunities to change things or change their mind. Then they print it out. It's put in a security envelope, and it goes to the last station where it's scanned in both sides. So you have the hard copy, you have the scan, and you have the digitized data. So everything is totally secure. And if somebody says that the machine didn't register their vote, they need to vote again, the registration will even tell you if they did vote or didn't vote. You know, so and you can say, yes, you did vote. According to this, your vote went through.
Exactly. And it has to be that way. There has to be documentation, extreme documentation, you know. And at the same point, you know, it was done to make it much more safe, and so there couldn't be disputes. And there really, I mean, as you saw in our state, there were two people that refused to have a concession speech because there were still some votes. And one, the big shocker, was Sweeney, the longest term Democrat. He was Speaker of the House. For him to lose, and for someone to beat him, who is not in politics, who spent like $200, he's a truck driver, and there's nothing wrong with that because, my gosh, anybody can run. But
right.
But, you know, it took, he did so little to topple him, and he was Sweeney's the second most powerful state politician. That's a big thing. And then you look, the whole thing, it makes you question things. And again, it has to do with the fact that people feel they're not being listened to.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Sweeney, of course, wanted to be the governor. And when the nod went to Murphy, Sweeney became very vindictive.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot, I'm sure you can remember, a lot of verbal play back and forth and posturing. Until things finally resolved, and people really have no patience for it, no patience. I just question sometimes, you know, the logic of putting someone in like this particular man when he's had xenophobic and anti-Muslim messages on social media. He did apologize and he deleted his accounts, but that's not the point. The point is, this is the kind of person who's going to be representing that area. And it comes, again, from, as I see it, as a pushback. People just are taking their anger and their frustration out on the politicians. And when people say to me, well, I don't want a politician, I'll vote anybody else in. Once that person goes into public office, they are a politician.
They are a politician, yes.
They will play it, and they will do it the way they see fit. And usually there's a lot of posturing. I mean, it's no different than lawyers before they go in and they discuss how they can, you know, downplay something or do a plea bargain or this or that. But there is so much going on now in terms of people being on the opposite side of the polls that are not even listening to one another, whether you be a super progressive that wants only their way and I'm not going to give up this or that, or if you're the group of people that need to have some fixing done because it's been so tough under two administrations of a past president that was doing nothing for the average man, and you managed to get a new president in, you would, and what I'm saying is a certain ethnic group that worked very hard to make sure we didn't have 4 years of the other. And then they see nothing being done for them. Exactly. It's very frustrating. So they're like, well, we put this president because we wanted a chance for hope and change. But you're not just putting a president in. Unfortunately, there are people that he has to work with. Now you have, again, all of this going back and forth. And, you know, you want a bill passed, but we don't want that. And then you have people, the Republican Party, going on and on. Well, look at this debt. Well, excuse me, where were you when that tax reform, supposed tax reform, went through? And the bulk of the tax reform went to the benefit of the mega rich and huge corporations, not the small businessman, huge corporations. So you have to look beyond the words that are said and realize where it's coming from. An important factor, look beyond the words. For instance, this county had, I've got to find it here because I just couldn't believe this, this county had a question, a referendum question, Sussex County. And it was related to, the way it was worded, if you didn't know what was going on, the intent or where the question, how the question was raised, was related to the nursing homes and what was going on during COVID and looking into the deaths. It passed very, very highly. The numbers were high. When I talked to a few people, and I asked, because it was 24 Sussex towns that did this, and the question was about the deaths. Let's look into it. But when you look into it further and the wording and the cause, you realize what this is about. Because it was the Sussex County Board of Commissioners and the state. This is a battle, the Sussex County Commissioners with the state. And they basically want to hold the governor responsible for not getting information on the Open Records Act. This isn't about looking into what happened, per se, and making those people responsible. We're talking subacute, again, Andover subacute, where all those deaths occurred, the 17 bodies being stored in a makeshift morgue. It was unbelievable. You know, why are we not pointing towards the owner's place? No. You have one party pointing the finger in this county, which is heavily Republican, and that's fine. But when you make it a personal vendetta, there's a problem. There's a problem here, you know, because it's just a way of getting back at the governor. It's not getting information. That's not what this is about. This is, it's a group of a party that want information, but they're more than the information. They're not looking for a solution to this. They are looking to nail the governor to the wall. And of course, taxpayers are going to be funding all the study. Here we go. Supposedly, it's an independent, public, bipartisan investigation into the state's oversight of long-term care facilities. Okay? So they want to make sure that something like this never happens again. Okay, that's fine. But why are you not holding the owners responsible of a private institution? This is not a public institution, a private one with the owners residing in New York. And obviously there's major issues there. There was no hidden agenda in the sense that, I mean, you know, Gottheimer was involved and, you know, when people weren't getting anywhere with the actual subacute home there, contacted him and said, we can't talk to our relatives, what's going on? He got very heavily involved with it. And there's no reason why people would own something and hide bodies, not have sufficient help there. Having people living in a nursing care situation where they're paying so much money and not being taken care of privately, properly. And you and I have brought this topic up several years ago about the nursing care situation. Like, how could something cost so much money and yet they're not, their care is really very good? And we're not talking about the Medicaid-funded ones, because it's very difficult to get into the into those type of nursing homes, in the sense you can't own anything. And if you did own something, they go back so many years. You can't hide your money, as at one time people would, you know, turn over their houses to their children or whatever, their bank accounts. No, no, no. You can't hide that anymore. So they really look into it. But why not look into the private ones, the people that are making hands over fist money? And these people only have access to those doctors that make a, I don't know how you would even explain it, but they basically go around. It reminds me of being a we used to call you an itinerant teacher. Like you did, like you were a psychologist or you were this person or that person. You know, not a major employee that where you're hands-on you know, with the children day after day, one group of kids, but that you would have to travel around and you offered your services on a rotating basis. Well, that's the case in some of these places, in most of them. Rotating doctors? I mean, I don't understand this. How could you be paying that kind of money and not having access to doctors on site, but having rotating doctors? So I think
there's
this has to be
a lot of questions, and those are good questions to ask. And
right.
It's often very confusing.
Right, and you know, I always find out that the only time you get somewhere is when you bring some of these things to light. And people brainstorm. For instance, looking at this question, I'm sure there'll be people that'll say, well, I didn't know. I mean, I had people tell me I didn't realize that that's what this was about. I thought this was about looking into all the homes and why this was a situation that this happened. Not holding the governing group there now accountable for what happened there. Or just accessing the records. How about looking into these things and making sure they're run properly? Oversight. Yeah, well, you have it for the public ones. Of course, you have some. But, of course, again, they're stretched out, as we know. You know, just like with diapers or all these other things and different facilities. How in the world, if you don't have sufficient people, and you have them on a rotating basis, or you have them monitoring and managing a huge number of them, how can you really have a pulse on what's going on? You know, you need more oversight.
Right.
But what about the private ones, which subacute was? So, again, this is what we mean. You know, you have to dig deeper than the question that's put to you. You have to look into it, who's funding it, why is it, you know, why are they looking to do this? Okay, so it was the Sussex County. It wasn't all of New Jersey. It was just this county. So county dollars will be used to investigate now. What are they going to come up with in the end? You know, that should be interesting to see.
It definitely should be.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we had the governor's race, and it was, it's going to be double digits, it's this, it's that. Again, if you're looking at the state election, you now have people starting to see that you can't just ignore people in the sense that you have those that are your constituents and those that believe in you, that want to see you succeed. And then you have those that are just waiting for you to trip up.
Right.
New Jersey has quite a few independent voters. quite a few. Some progressives not happy that things aren't going, you know, fast enough. You have some moderates that would like it to be even more conservative. And then you have, again, like I said, I think this just was an election of emotion. People just tired, disgusted. It's just another thing, and they need to make the voice heard. And the only way they can is by voting. Well, most people. There are some that we'll get into that in a bit.
Okay.
So that's my take. My take is that people are frustrated and tired, you know, not having the job, waiting how long for unemployment, you know, and then the DMV, not being able to get into the DMV. Would it made a difference if it was somebody different running the show as governor? No, it would not. Because of the fact that programs and social services and these type of places, the first cuts that are made are workers in these type of organizations. And we saw that on a national level, you know, with President Trump when he started shoring up the budget to pay for that big tax reform that benefited, you know, those that were making big, big money. What happened is they slashed programs to ribbons, got rid of this, got rid of that. I mean, things like the consumer advocacy, where you could actually report issues of, you know, fraudulency or different aspects of buying that were questionable. Even the organizations that we had that managed health, we had different groups with scientists that worked worldwide to keep a pulse on things going on in other countries in terms of disease. Gone. These things were not only slashed, many of these different organizations, well, we don't need them anymore. We haven't used them in the past so many years, we don't need them anymore, so let's just get rid of it. We'll save money here, we'll save money there. And that's what a businessman does. But at the same time, they were put in place to avoid a major catastrophe. That's why they're there. EPA slashed to ribbons. You know, I mean, so it's, you have to question.
I'm losing you a little bit. There we go. You're back.
Are we still connected here? Because one never knows. This is why I don't use the cell phone up here. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it is overwhelming. I'm like marginally involved, I guess, with politics. I'm an elected official for the Democratic County Committee. And I have also been working the polls now since 2014. I think I got them all. I didn't miss any of them. And there's so many things that need to be done that you can't possibly fracture your attention and do any of them justice. So I've been spending a lot of time this past year, especially asking myself a lot of tough questions and trying to find a handful of things that I care very, very deeply about, and then just trust other people who will pick up the slack in the other areas. Because, again, everyone wants to help out and everyone wants to be effective. So I'm looking at that, and it's very hard. There's so many important things that need to be addressed, and there's so little time in life. And then there's so many other things that are wonderful about life, as you pointed out in the beginning of the program, that we shouldn't miss out on while we're here. So it becomes a balancing act. And part of this podcast is that journey. I get to talk to a lot of people. I get to share thoughts, and I get to ponder what they say and contemplate their words, and it's helped me make decisions. And I'm also involved, as are you, in a lot of community things. I'm on committees, I'm on boards, I'm on a lot of things. And lately I've been asking myself, you know, where can I make the most difference? You know, I enjoy all of them, and I think they're all important, but I really need to, at this in the winter of my years, I really need to give that a lot of thought and make a lot of decisions.
Well, the fact that you actually have a platform for people to present all kinds of views on the same topic is amazing. And that is a big thing, because there are many places where you cannot do that anymore.
Right. No.
And that's a big thing. Again, it comes, you know, when people just get down to the fact that it ends up being, I guess the best way to put it is, when you have so much of everything like we have in this country, we've had a long time of plenty.
Yes.
All right, for a very long time. And then you get to a point that where everything that you've known has been thrown to the wind. Jobs that you thought there were, so there was no way there would not be any problem with keeping that job. All of a sudden, everything that we've known is changed.
It's changed,
and
yes.
There is a new normal. And it isn't, and I think people had the false hope that, well, now we're better. We're getting vaccinated and we're better and things are going to go back to normal. But no, things are concentrated and there's waves of different things going on. And for so long, workers have been abused, because it was for upper management and it wasn't even middle management anymore. It was them versus us. You know, we're not going to do this. We're not going to, you know, first it was, and I don't know if people could see the progression, but I'm sure there are many of our listeners can remember when all of a sudden jobs were going overseas.
Right.
Well, why are they going overseas? Well, some of them are going overseas so we can have more of a profit. We don't want to pay the expensive health benefits. Okay, fine. You don't want to pay the benefits. Then all of a sudden it was, well, now we're going to send factories over there, and
right.
Because the pay is cheaper. Then it was corporate offices are going overseas because they pay no taxes.
Right.
Okay, so now you're saving on a multitude of levels, and it's just the profit factor you want. But then it also came to the point of abuse of what workers did have jobs here. And that happened for quite a long time, you know, where the pay was minimal, trying to get a job, you had to jump through hoops, 3-4 phone interviews before they even attempted to meet you in person. Well, you're talking about months before
right.
you can even access a job. It wasn't just going in, well, yeah, this sounds good, and you sound like it'll work out, because there were so many people out of work, and they had a big pool to pick from. Therefore, they could dangle this carrot with not many benefits or even chance of advancement or great pay and say, you know, this is what we have, and we have like 100 to 200 applicants for the one or two jobs.
Right.
And then you see someone like Bezos with Amazon making money beyond belief. I forgot what the figure was in terms of how many minutes, maybe it might even be a minute, for every minute he's opening a new plant.
Wow.
But yet the workers cannot be unionized. They were intimidated, and it was proven that he intimidated them. And they basically, what's done from, and I've known this from a few people, and of course I'm sure it's not the same in every state, but what happened is that there is this quota, and they keep raising the quota, where it's inhuman. Inhuman. There's no way you can keep up that pace. There is no way, and I would always say this to people as, you know, a union delegate, I would say, you know, why are you getting yourself so frenetic? You do the best you can. The machines cannot even keep up. And they're breaking down constantly.
Wow. Yeah, I wasn't aware that it was
constantly.
That bad. I was aware that it was difficult, but I wasn't aware that it was that bad.
Yeah, yeah. And this was even with education. I saw this, I mean, I'm retired now 5 years, but I saw it, I had very close friends that were within the classroom. I was a special area, and I, you know, was able to, at that time, you know, I had the curriculum. I helped write the curriculum. I made sure it was very, you know, intensive, all comprehensive, and had every aspect of the curriculum that it would actually enhance the kids' learning in other subject areas. But all of a sudden, we're not going to buy books. We're going to use these particular items, and you're going to have to make copies for all the centers. So now the teacher has to have like 5 centers for each subject, and you have to have these copies of everything for them because you don't have the books. Okay, but you only have 2 copy machines in the whole building, and they're constantly breaking down because of overuse. Then the teacher's computers, well, we don't have enough printing ink. You can't use the printers. Well, what are you supposed to do then? You have to buy your own cartridges of ink. The frustration on that level was beyond belief because, you know, you're making it impossible to do the job, you know, and you find that people will adjust and adapt. They will. Majority of them will. But when you keep getting your head and banging against the wall and making it impossible to do the job, then what happens? That's when people's motivation and their will gets broken. That's when they become broken, and that's when you start seeing people leave. And they were saying teachers are leaving like unbelievably very, very high rates because even with this, with COVID, I mean, how the state of New Jersey, in the state of New Jersey, there were some towns that went back quickly, some that didn't. And here you're looking at the fact that it should be localized because there are some districts that don't have huge school, a lot of schools, and they don't have dilapidated buildings, and they don't have to worry about the fact that they have air conditioners and, you know, whatever. But there are other schools that you can't even open the windows. You have over 30-plus kids in a room. You have computers that are not working, and they're supposed to be taking tests. You have situations like now where you can't get subs, and they never hired enough teachers. So I could think of a particular high school where the teachers are not only doing their job, they have to now, and it's not even, you're not even asked, you're told, you must report to this room because there's a class not covered. There's no teacher for that class. They have to, administrators are jockeying people around, so they are working around the clock. Some are not even taking lunches. They are working straight through from the minute they get there.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I've worked in the educational system on different levels myself, and I know that it's been getting more difficult as the time passes on. I remember in Pennsylvania,
right.
I taught in a college, and this was computers were still starting to become used more and more. So I was teaching a class in one part of Pennsylvania, and 5 other classes throughout the state were hooked up with a computer. So I had to not only teach my class, but I had to look at the computer to see what 5 other places were saying. it was very challenging.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then with the COVID, I mean, you have the parents, you had some school systems where the parents wanted the kids back in because they wanted to go back to work. And then you had some where their parents were petrified. You know, they were home and they were petrified to have their kids go and bring something back, be sick, and bring it back to the whole family and the neighborhood. So you see, it's all perspective from what point you're looking at it, economically and ethically. So there you go. And here's a good one on a local level. Well, 2 of them. And that would be, this would be great in closing. Again, what vantage point you're looking at this. There was a Sussex County commissioner, I won't say his name, he sent a group text out. It was in relation to this debate that they were having because there were people running, Republicans, there were actually Democrats standing up. And, you know, it's nice to have a debate and hear different points of view.
Yes.
Just because you've had the job for all those years, I remember saying that to a union president one time, just because you've had this job for years, and take note, Mr. Sweeney, just because you've had it for years doesn't mean you're entitled to this forever. And anyway, this man, used foul language in the text, and it was threatening. It was directed towards a school board member. And I really don't know if I could say it, but it was like this, and then they used a derogatory word, starting with B, for the woman, does not know what she is in for. Excuse me, you're a seated commissioner, and you're an incumbent, and you're saying things like this? He later apologized publicly, and it was related to her. There were remarks made that, I talk coarsely because I'm a working man. No. Once you decide you are a public official or you are dealing in the public sector, you must have respect and a code of conduct and a code of ethics to follow.
Right.
You are dealing with the public. You are supposed to be doing things a certain way. If you were a teacher and acted that way, you would be before the Board of Education and have your increment withheld. And there would be a hearing, the Board of Ed. There is no excuse for directing language like that. And then he said, well, I was doing it towards the organizer of the candidates debate, you know, the women's group. That's not an answer. That's not an excuse. That shouldn't be used towards anyone. You should always speak with respect to another person who is a public official. Privately, what you say to each other when it's off the record, well, that could even get you in trouble now. But the director of the board said she was not going to go into detail about it because it was a personal issue. I beg to differ. That's not a personal issue. It is a public one. When you are a public official, you have to think about what you say. Because it can be offensive to some, and you should not be looking to be offensive to the public and your coworkers.
Very, very well said. And yes, if you're in a position of responsibility or if you're in a position where you're representing people, you really do need to, to consider before you speak and to weigh everything before you speak.
Right. And I will end with this because this was an incident that happened in our county here, and I find it very disturbing because it's happened all over this country. But on July 4th, there was a fatal shooting of a man right outside his home in Newton. His wife made a 911 call at 9:30. The man was agitated, and she was worried about him because she was worried that he was reacting, you know, to the fireworks and that he might be suicidal. She was asking for help. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Three cops came to shot him. I just don't understand why it was shoot to kill. You know, why not shoot at a leg or whatever?
I heard about that.
Anyway. Yeah, the man in question was a veteran. He suffered from PTSD. He was not just some Joe Schmo. And you know what? And I shouldn't even say that because every human being should be dealt with dignity. And I'll explain further at the end. But he was a specialist at the Department of Army. He was an EEO for the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Pentagon, one of the most senior uniformed officers. All the information is very sketchy. So he may or may not have had a semi-automatic weapon. Nobody bothered, and I'm not blaming the police. Let me take that note, because my brother was a policeman, and I know what he went through.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that there has to be better training. People realize you need a police department. I mean, look at the vote up in Minneapolis, and the things that went there were totally a horror went on there. You need them, but you need training. You have to have training to how to disengage someone, just like a teacher has a training in terms of how in workshops, when do you move in, when do you move out, what do you do in a situation when, you know, we're constantly trained on how to deal with different situations. And I cannot believe this was allowed to happen.
And we're going to have to continue because we only have a few seconds to go. Ashley,
right.
Yeah, that's worth pursuing in our next conversation. Thank you so very much. You're awesome. I missed you. And thank you for giving me a lot to meditate on tonight.
Right. And we just have to start looking at why things are done, who brings up the questions, and dig deeper. That's the thing. Let's start digging deeper and start putting our heads together to see networking and brainstorming of what we can do to rectify some of these situations.
I agree 100%. Thank you so very much. I'll give you a call in a couple of days. Have a wonderful evening and stay warm.
Most definitely. And again, happy Veterans Day to our veterans who have put so much out there in every way tomorrow. You know,
mm-hmm.
we are honored by you.
Thanks again, Astrid. I'll talk to you soon.
Definitely. Take care. Have a good evening, you and all our listeners.
You too, and thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures.